Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Neil Etheridge, a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Some footballers, they break through at a very young age, and we are aware of them at sort of 17, 18, 19, and they come through the ranks, and are household names quite quickly. Yours is a very different story.
Yes, very different story. I'm still wondering if I'm a household name now.
well, after this interview, my friend, don't you worry about that. I suppose I'd just like to stop by saying, did you always want to be a goalkeeper?
No. Not at all. Did I ever want to become a football player? It's probably the question you should be asking.
Right. Yeah, all right, so it's even further back.
No, I mean, I started off as a young age, as most people do within the UK, within England, you know, playing football, playing for your school, playing down on the street with your mates. And that was me, you know. Played outfield, glory hunter, wanted to score the goals, you know. And I was 10 years old. It was called the Millennium Cup, actually. And my local team said, oh, Neil, do you want to go in goal? I must have been the tallest guy there. Well, maybe, I don't know. So I went in goal and I actually got like goalkeeper of the competition.
Yeah, okay.
School competition. But then from then, I played in goal for my school and got picked up from a district. And, you know, obviously then got picked up by Chelsea at the age of 12.
And at Chelsea, Were you playing in goal then?
Yes, yeah.
Right, okay, so that you've established yourself as
yeah.
as a goalkeeper, of course. Now, you played at Chelsea and then went to Fulham, of course, with their youth academy. You signed professional papers around the age of 18. What went through your mind when you signed professional papers? Because I'm sure it's every kid's dream who plays football to sign. Did you think, right, this is the start, or were you aware, you know, it's a lot of hard work to come? What was the feeling?
I was fortunate. Okay, so I was 16. I was in the England schoolboy setup, mm-hmm. And at the time Chelsea were going through the big transformation. Abramovich was there for I think 1 or 2 years. You know, while I was at the club, obviously I was, you know, in the academy, and from there they made it clear that they were going through this big transformation and I wasn't going to be a part of it. They were going to bring someone else in. They were going to bring a lot of other players in. Mm-hmm. They wanted foreign players. They wanted the best around Europe, and it was clear. And you know, obviously, I wasn't that at the time.
Was that hard to take, or did you just kind of accept it for what it was?
The story goes, I mean, it went into the scholarship years. So just before they were going to offer me a scholarship, I think the academy director at the time sat down with my dad and was like, look, Neil can stay at the club, but the reality is he's not going to play youth team football. Mm. And we would suggest that he moved elsewhere. And they were very good about it. You know, they were very good. And at that time, like I said, I was in the England schoolboy team. So it was kind of like a bit, oh, I'm playing for England schoolboys, but you're not going to stay at Chelsea. But that did help because there was a lot of interest in me at the time of a lot of other professional clubs. And,
sure.
And Fulham was there. It was across the road. It was close to home. And I ended up obviously signing for Fulham and signing the professional contract there. And looking back on it now, I kind of just went through the motions of it, to be honest. It was hard to describe. I mean, of course, I was in it and I didn't know anything else at the time. You know, I mean, I didn't know if I wanted to be a football player. I didn't know if I didn't want to be a football player. I was just kind of in this environment of football. I really enjoyed it. I was having fun and I just wanted it to continue.
Sure. And not long after signing for Fulham, you're loaned out to Leatherhead, incidentally, my old local club. Yeah. You know, God bless them. Was that disappointing to go from Fulham, who were, I believe, a Premier League club at the time, to a club who were sort of seventh, eighth tier in, you know, non-league in the English football system?
Yeah, I think it was strange, but I wanted to play games. You know, I wasn't really getting much exposure playing games, and Leatherhead was around the corner, and it wasn't far, and it was men's football. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's men's football, and.
I can testify to that as well.
and it was a good experience. I didn't play many games there, but it was a good experience playing men's football at a young age and seeing what it's about, seeing the passion that, regardless of what you said, like what level they're playing at, how intense it is and how seriously they take it. And it was kind of like they were trying to enlighten me to what was going to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. And so did you... I tell you, you learn a lot, really, from a young age in that kind of environment. It was all like a school of hard knocks, really.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I think the majority of my loan moves were. My time at Fulham was a complete learning curve. And I think not even at Fulham, obviously, we'll talk about it, but like the rest of my career was just a big learning curve mm-hmm. for football and out of football. And you still learn. I think, you know, I think it'd be stupid for me to say I'm not learning now. I'm learning constantly. If it's on the field, off the field. There are experiences that I go through on a day-to-day basis, learning everything, basically.
Yeah. So in 2011, you make your Fulham debut in the Europa League and play very well. You know, unfortunately for Fulham, it was a disappointment because a 93rd minute equaliser and they're out of the Europa League. I mean, how was that? Were you nervous at the age of 21 making your debut? Were you sort of really ready for it and excited?
It was one of those ones, really weird. When you're younger, I was like, I just want to play. And there was a few times before that Mark Swartz was my number one at the time, and mm-hmm. he had a few injuries, and I was like, all right, this is my chance. I'm going to play. And then he'd always, you know, he'd recover or he'd play through the pain.
Yeah.
And it was a strange one because obviously when I had that chance, I thought I was ready. And I don't know, it's hard to say whether I was or what I wasn't. I really enjoyed the experience. Obviously the last minute goal wasn't great, obviously, and obviously the club then went out of the Europa League due to it. So it was a tough one. I mean, it's not, you know, your debut for the club and they get knocked out of the Europa League. It's a tough one for you to take. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't easy.
No, and at your time at Fulham, was a player like Mark Schwarzer very long in the tooth? You know, had an amazing career. Did you learn a lot from him?
Yeah, we're very good friends. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to him many a times throughout my Championship career, my Premier League career now. And I don't think he knows how much he did for me. Mm. Probably until this season when I told him. Yeah. But like,
well, no doubt he'll listen to this interview. Nah. So I'm sure.
But he did so much. You know, I learned so much from him off the field, on the field. Being a number one goalkeeper, but so obviously at this time I wasn't a number one goalkeeper, but learning from him and how he conducted himself both on and off the field about being a number one goalkeeper, it was amazing. You know, I mean, things like him telling me, and I was like 21 at the time, 22, and he's like, "Neil, you're never going to play." And I'm like, "What do you mean I'm never going to play?" He goes, "I'm never going to let you play." I'm like, "Cheers, mate. Thanks." Yeah.
But how does that sit here? Obviously, it was said in a certain way.
Yeah, no, it was. It was said in a way where, we're friends. We are friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's a business at the end of the day. And it's his career and mm-hmm. it's my career. And now, obviously, where it's turned and I'm a number one, and it is this for any number one, it's any player, doesn't matter what it is, you don't want to get rid of your shirt. You don't want to lose your position. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't him being horrible to me at a young age or younger age. It was him preparing me, saying, "Well, this is the way I took it. Or, Neil, if you ever become a number one, make sure you don't give up."
Yeah.
And, you know, I've taken that through every club that I've played for. Mm. That's the way I've really learned a lot. I mean, it's only a small thing. There's so many more things I could go on about. But that was one major thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not because you don't like your number two or another goalkeeper. You do. You get on with them. But, you know, it is it's a dog-eat-dog world out there.
Of course. And one thing I find quite fascinating is that at this time when you're trying to play as much as possible, whether it be out on loan or the odd appearance for Fulham, as we've just mentioned, you're an international footballer. You're going to the Philippines, because obviously you're English-Filipino. Mm. You're going and you're playing in front of big crowds on the other side of the world. Was that a bit of could you say even a culture shock?
I learned a lot again, like, you know, traveling around the world, seeing things that a lot of people haven't been fortunate enough to see, cultures, countries, experiences, and obviously crowds and stadiums. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, before I'd, you know, even played in the Europa League, I said 2010, so I'd have been 20 years old. I played in front of 100,000 people.
Yeah, incredible.
Not many people in their career, even at this stage in the Premier League, can say they've done that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, playing in front of larger crowds on an international level definitely put me in a good position for the rest of my career.
And was it almost sort of like a parallel universe, isn't it? You're over there playing in front of 100,000 people, and then you come back and you're almost trying to vying for a position on the bench for Fulham or a club in the Football League. Was it quite hard to kind of navigate those two different things going on?
Yeah, that's how it was for the first all my years at Fulham. Definitely, you know, obviously had it so much. You know, you've played more international games than you have league games, and I guess being you're number one for your country, but you're still a youngster and you're not playing regular first team football. Juggling it all, you know, having a lot of media in Asia and then not having any media really back in the UK, it was a lot to, you know, it was like a parallel universe, yes.
Mm. In 2012, you signed for Bristol Rovers, you're down into the Football League, and this is when you started to play a bit more. Were you, you know, did you relish playing that more, or had previous experiences of not playing so much? Was it hard to kind of get into the groove of being a number one a bit more?
I enjoyed my time at Bristol, I really did, you know, I mean, playing games is, you can't really use words to describe how amazing mm-hmm. playing football in front of people it is. It's really, it's amazing. So I really enjoyed my time there. It was cut short, but I enjoyed it. You know, I really enjoyed my time playing, and the club was really good to me, and I even moved down to Bristol and everything like that. So, you know, it was a shame that part of, you know, my loan spell was cut short.
Mm. And all these loan spells that you made, you know, a handful of them being at Fulham and then one or two other places, Again, when you sign papers for Fulham when you're 18, I wouldn't imagine you'd have it in your head to go out on loan. And we see some players who do go out on loan, and a few maybe fade away, a few remain in the Football League. A very respectable career, don't get me wrong. You know, I'd have bloody loved to have done that. and some players, they managed to come through it. And I think it's fair to say now you're a Premier League footballer, it would probably be the latter for you. You know, how did you keep yourself keen and interested, you know, going from loan to loan? Was it difficult? You know, there you are walking into a different dressing room, trying to fit into another team and so on.
Yeah, it's always tough going into any dressing room because you don't know what it's about. You don't know who the boys are. You don't know whether you're going to fit in. I've been very fortunate with the teams that I've been involved with that all the dressing rooms have been very good and very nice. Yeah, that part of it is tough. Going on loan is a, you know, I think it is crucial for young players to do, to learn the trade where football means something. With all due respect to under 23 level, I think under 23s is nice football. Mm-hmm. When you come to league football, 3 points is at stake every weekend, and that is relegation, that is, you know people's livelihoods, that is kids and putting food on the table and promotion, and there's so much more at stake, and there's so much more you can learn from playing league football than under 23s.
And did you enjoy that experience? That sort of what you've described there is, it's much more of a raw experience, I suppose, from what certainly fans perceive as the glitz and glamour of the Premier League.
You wouldn't get the same goalkeeper on a Saturday, you know, for even me. You know, you wouldn't get the same goalkeeper stepping out at Wembley, mm-hmm. as you would if you was to get me down at a park. Mm. It's hard. It's very different. There's that adrenaline buzz. There's that. There's more motivation. I don't know what it is. You know, I mean, people. I think players would be lying if they said, "Oh, it's amazing." It's amazing experience playing it down the park. It's different, you know. It's very different. That pressure, that the expectation, mm-hmm. makes you perform more and, mm-hmm. and better. And yeah, like as a football player, that's what you thrive of, and that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and so you had the different experiences, and then of course playing in front of 100,000 people in the Philippines, you had an array of experiences, which you say, not many other people. In fact, maybe no one else currently in the Premier League has had quite that in the way you have.
Yeah, I kind of flip-reversed it and did it the other way around. So, no, my story is very different. And it has been, to be honest, through the whole of my life and my career, it's been extremely different. And a lot of ups, a lot of downs. And I'm very thankful and blessed to be where I am today.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I'd love to talk to you about 2014, you're released from Fulham. And if I'm right in saying, you then paid to train with Charlton Athletic. You knew the goalkeeping coach there. And this was, you know, you may well have finished playing as a footballer around there, am I right in saying?
Yeah, so 2014 came about, and we had, through that season, I was riddled with injury. I think I pulled my quad 3 times that season, and I didn't even see, you know, how I was going to get back fit, and I ended up just about doing it towards the end of the season. Fulham ended up going down. Felix McGaff comes in, new manager, wants to change everything. We had, for my national team, qualification for the Asian Cup at the time. Mm. I went over there, I played the first game, pulled my quad again, frustrating time. Obviously then being out of contract. There was a few offers on the table.
Okay.
There was a few offers on the table which potentially, or I guess I should have taken, definitely should have taken. But, you know, I was in the Premier League bubble, under 23s, or, you know, first team on the bench, Premier League bubble. So I didn't take the offers up, and in the lower leagues, they try to get their squad sorted as soon as possible. You know, they want to get the players they can. They need to get their finances right as soon as possible and as early as they can. And I missed the boat on a lot of opportunities, or a few opportunities.
And why do you think, was that waiting for a bigger offer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie about it. It was all about, you know, financially. I just bought a house at the time. I need a mortgage. I've got a mortgage. Yeah. I've got this to pay for. I've got certain direct debits coming out of my bank account. They were the wrong decisions. They weren't footballing decisions. They were the wrong decisions, but I did it. And then obviously, like you said, I ended up knowing the goalkeeping coach at Charlton. I was living in southwest London. Obviously, they're based in East London. And, you know, I didn't pay to go and train with them as such, but obviously I trained there free of charge.
Sorry,
but
yeah.
I was traveling, and they weren't paying me expenses or anything like that. It was just to keep fit. Mm. And even Charlton offered me a contract. I came in, and the goalkeeping coach said, yeah, just come and train with us. And I trained. The manager, Bob Peters at the time, like, really liked me. Oh, we'll offer him a contract. Offered me a contract, sat down. What did I do? I turned it down. And then obviously there was a bit awkward time at the club, but I went back there training, and time went on, and I'm making phone calls, and I'm doing my own research and stuff. And yeah, nothing really happened. Nothing fell in front of me. I was at trial at Wolverhampton. I went trial at Exeter. I was at trial. Oh, there's so many places. And people were having, oh, you haven't got enough experience. You're really good, but we can't take you. We're going to bring someone else in. We can't afford you. We can't pay. And I ended up calling some people and saying, yeah, I'll play for free. Just write up a no contract. And then people were like, oh, we can't do that. We can't do that. And I'm like, and at that stage, I kind of just turned around and to my family and said, look, I do live a parallel life on the other side of the world. Let me just leave. I'm just going to go. I know my house is going to be sold in a couple of weeks. Let me just leave and, you know, just find another life and play football in Asia or in the Philippines or do something over there. And that was, you know, pretty close. And then all of a sudden I get a phone call from an agent. Do you want to play for Oldham in League One? Or do you want to play? Do you just want to be a part of a team? You might play. They're going to give you 200 quid a week. So I said, go on then, let's try it and sign for Oldham.
Would it be fair to say that offer from Oldham, did it save your career in England?
Yeah, it did. No, I can't lie. It wasn't a great experience. I didn't like being in that situation. I was in a slight, you know, I don't like to use the word depression because I think there's so many levels of it, but I wasn't in a right, it wasn't...
It was a low.
It was a low, very low, low place. And I didn't have a place in Manchester, so I was sleeping in my mate's house and stuff like that. It did save my career. You know, I can't lie and say it didn't. I mean, I wouldn't be involved in football if that phone call never came and all that opportunity, even from then it wasn't all plain sailing because I didn't play for the first 3-4 league games and then... I played in the Johnson's Paint, I think, semi-final and went to penalties and I missed the penalty and we got knocked out of the cup and didn't play again for the Oldham, you know. So it wasn't easy even that season.
Yeah, and after Oldham, you know, you went sort of back to Charlton on loan and then Walsall came in for you. And this is only 3 years ago as well, which is incredible considering the teams you've been playing against this season, you know. But you're 25, you signed for Walsall and this is when you start to get regular game time.
And
it's fair to say you were probably very ready for this at that point. Was it hard after those experiences that you've just described, you know, as a bit of a low, to get yourself up for it? To think, I can do this, I'm capable?
I think it taught me a lot. And I mean that in a sense of, I've been given an opportunity, I've seen the lows, I've got nothing to lose. I'm fearless at this time. And I think you speak to any professional, if you're fearless, that's a fantastic thing. I remember getting a phone call on the way back from the Philippines for my summer holidays and I got a message from Neil Cutler, the goalkeeping coach, and he said, hey, do you want to come down and play for Walsall? I'm not going to lie, I didn't know too much about the club and I didn't know too much about, you know, obviously playing regular football in League One and League Two. I didn't really know too much about it. And he was like, look, meet me and Dean Smith and at the training ground and we'll see if we can come into an agreement. And I was like, all right, cool. So I literally 2 days later, I was like, sorting things out. There wasn't much room for negotiation at Walsall, you know, it's kind of a take it or leave it offer.
Sure.
They offered 1 year. At that point, I wanted a little bit more security. So I went for 2 years and I signed 2 years and I was happy. The first season, you know, we were on a, you know, promotion hunt to try and get ourselves into the championship, but obviously fell short.
And at Walsall, you playing regularly, you play for two seasons. Was this when you started thinking to yourself, hang on, I can start to look back up the league table, mate, the league system, or are you just thinking, just take every week as it comes?
Just taking every week as it comes, to be honest. I was just enjoying being back in football and that kind of... I enjoyed the bunch of lads, you know. I enjoyed having a great team. That team was really good and the manager was great and I was learning from Neil Cutler so much. And also, you know, it's different. I was number one there and you get treated differently and I enjoyed just that. So I was just taking it as it come, enjoying and messing around in the change room and just having a good time and enjoying myself. And that was the main thing for me. That was the main thing about it. And it flew by that first year.
The just enjoyment of it was back.
The enjoyment was back. And to have that 2 year security, I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't life changing money at all, but it was just to have that 2 year security. Bearing in mind, I was still travelling from Surrey to Walsall every day in the car. But yeah, I mean, it was tough, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and in May 2017, you got a move to Cardiff City in the Championship under Neil Warnock. Did you think when you signed for them on a free? So I should ask you actually. So what was the, did Cardiff come in and you decided to leave Walsall, or did you say no to Walsall and then you thought I'm going to look for a move elsewhere?
So after the promotion hunt, so that would be enough for 2016 at Walsall. We lost 11 players, I think, 11 or 12 players, and we were never going to be the same team again. And so it was never going to happen the year after.
Right.
So we were rebuilding from the back, and I was still going to be there, and that helped me in a way because we were slightly disjointed at Walsall that season, and it helped me to be able to show what I could do. Because the year before, defensively, we were so strong. And the second year, we weren't so much, but I was able to showcase what I could do. Because,
different style of goalkeeper.
Yeah, exactly. So that really helped. In the January transfer window, there was a few teams that were interested my second year at Walsall. And for one reason or the other, you know, the two teams couldn't agree, and that's that in football. You know, it doesn't matter how much a player wants to go, if the two teams don't agree or the two clubs don't agree, doesn't happen. And that was another learning curve.
Yeah.
You know, teams wanting you and how do you perform, but if you kind of want to, I mean, I would, you know, the two teams that were interested were in the Championship, I want to go and play in the Championship.
Of course,
now.
Yeah.
And I'm being held back, or I felt like I was being held back. So how do I feel held back but still perform? Mm-hmm. That's another learning curve, you know? So obviously I didn't leave. I continued the season, saw it out. There was a few championship clubs sniffing around at the end of that season. I was out of contract. I told Walsall, you know, to go to it, I told Walsall that I would like to move on. And the chairman there was very, of course, he wanted to keep me. But mm-hmm. I said to him, look, it's not going to happen. And he was fine with that in the end. And so was the manager at the time. And they knew that was coming. They knew that was coming. So a few clubs were coming and you know, I met with a few of them. I met with Neil Warnock. And that was that, really.
And what was it like meeting Warnock? Is he the character that he portrays himself as in the media?
I think what was like a breath of fresh air was that he was black and white.
Yes.
He told me exactly what was going to happen. Uh-huh. And he told me, and I could see and feel the sincerity and the truth that was coming out. Mm-hmm. He didn't try and lie or say this. And he was like, look, Neil, I'm bringing you in. I'm bringing Lee Camp in. Lee Camp's not going to start the season because he's not going to be fit. You're going to be the number one. Until he's fit. Mm-hmm. But if you've done really well, you'll keep your spot. Uh-huh. If you don't, I'm changing you. And I'm like, all right, cool. So it's down on you as a player. It's like, okay, well, I've got to perform. If I don't perform, then he comes in. That's fair enough. That's all I wanted. And he was true to his word.
Yeah. And when you signed for Cardiff, did you think to yourself it was going to go as well as it did?
No, of course not. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm beaten in the first 6-7 games. And I was just like, wow, you know, this is unbelievable. And obviously they got, you know, rested at Christmas or New Year's, they got drops, whatever you want to call it. That was a fantastic experience. Sounds stupid, but it was. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was surreal. The whole season was surreal. I mean, to get promoted in your first season in the Championship was amazing.
And to the step up that you've made from the Premier League for the quality that you're playing against now, and yet you're holding your own. You know, for a goalkeeper who only 3 years ago was playing League One football, it's quite an incredible achievement.
I feel like I am. I hope I am. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm just doing the best and trying to learn and improve every week and obviously help Cardiff out and help the team out. And yeah, it's just I'm trying to improve myself, and that's what I'm trying to do. And then I'm obviously getting on the training field and rectifying mistakes that I'm making, and just, you know, I'm looking forward to consistently playing. I just enjoy playing football now. I really enjoy it. And obviously, being through what I've been through in my career, it's nice to kind of... it's happy that I stuck with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, I've got to ask you. You obviously been playing for the Philippines. You've got over 60 caps. What's it like playing under Sven-Göran Eriksson at international level?
Sven's been there for the last 2-3 camps, and mm-hmm. he's watched us, and he's been very happy, and nice guy, you know. It's different, you know, because I kind of fly in for internationals, I fly out, mm-hmm. and I don't see too much of it, and a lot of the time I'm with the goalkeeping coach, and but, you know, he's really good, he seems really good around the place, and, you know, the amount of experience he's got. I think I was in Malaysia last month, and watching England beat Germany 5-1 on my phone, I was like, oh, Sven was the manager there. And then he's sitting across from me eating his breakfast and his eggs and on his toast. And that was good. No, it's really good. I mean, that's fantastic. For the national team, it's great. And it's a massive name. And, you know, hopefully that continues.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, if he takes the players on any socials, you'll have a few stories from that.
Yeah.
Perhaps the less said about that, the better. Yeah. Neil Everidge, thank you very much.
Cheers.
It's been
thank
an absolute pleasure
much.
Talking to you. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.